Are you missing six-man co-host Mike Myers? Well, you don't have to. Go to geekbrunchpodcast.com and explore all of Mike's podcast universe, including my favorite, Mike M's Weekly Reads, to stay up to date with Mike's personal reading list. You got Geek Brunch, a bi-weekly celebration of geek culture with Mike and Bill Bomer, where they dish about comics, movies, TVs, and even food sometimes. You got DC Noise, focusing on Mike's favorite publisher, DC. Collector's Corner, DC Everything Else, another favorite of mine, and Geek Brunch Retro. So feel free to go find Mike at geekbrunchpodcast.com.
Aloha, it's Jason from Hawaii. Welcome to a special edition of the Comics for Fun and Profit podcast. In this episode, I will be interviewing a friend of the podcast, writer and Hugo Award nominee, Paul Cornell. Paul is here to promote the trade paperback of Conan On from Ahoy Comics. It comes out on March 27th. Paul, welcome back to the Comics for Fun and Profit podcast. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm fine. It's lovely to be here. Thank you very much for having me back.
No, Paul, thank you very much. Now, listeners, I'm briefly going to go over some of Paul's works, and I've told Paul he could please feel free to correct me at any time or add anything. Now, Paul has written a number of Doctor Who novels. He's written the Shadow Police novels and some novels of the Witches of Lichford novellas.
Witches of Lichford.
Lichford, I'm sorry. Thank you. He has written for some TV shows such as Doctor Who, Robin Hood, Primeval, and Elementary. Now, he's for Marvel Comics. He wrote the Captain Britain and MI-13. I wrote that wrong. MI-13 issues 1 to 15 and the annual. And also he's worked on the Wolverine series, volume 5, issues 1 to 13. For DC Comics, he wrote Action Comics from issues 890 to 904 and the annual 13. He also wrote Saucer Country, Saucer State, and Saucer Country, the finale that just came out on February 7th. Paul, before I ask you about what is Saucer Country about, did I miss anything? I got a funny feeling. I think I missed something.
I mean, it's been an enormous career. I couldn't attest to the accuracy of all those issue numbers, certainly, but you've got a basic gist of it. And I've done a lot of stuff, and I can't always remember it myself. Saucer Country, we've just done a crowdfunder via Zoop to complete it. It's my saga of a U.S. Presidential candidate who gets abducted by aliens that's been at least 3 different comics companies. Mm-hmm. And we finally got to finish it, courtesy of Zoop. So we've got an enormous completed volume, which... has gone out to the backers of the campaign, and there's going to be a bookstore and comic store version courtesy of Chris Ryle's Syzygy Company sometime this autumn. So that's very pleasing.
That's going to be nice. Because when I heard about the premise, because doing some of the research, I'm like, ooh, this sounds interesting. It's something I want to check out.
It's me doing my deep dive into UFO mythology, which I've been inured in since I was a kid. So it's all that stuff, but with a different point of view, I think. I have quite a skeptical point of view. I find the mythology fascinating.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But I am not a believer.
Yes. No, I understand. Mm. I really do. But I'm going to continue on, because if not, our whole interview would be talking about
UFOs. Yes, let us do the job we came here for, indeed.
Yes. All right. I'm going to ask Paul, anything else you want to add before I continue on?
No. Dive in.
Okay. All right. Before I begin the interview, I want to give a big shout to Hannah Bahedri of Superfan Promotions for asking Comics for Fun and Profit to interview Paul again. And, you know, Hannah, thank you for setting up this interview. And also, Hannah, thank you very much for the advanced reading copy. Thank you very much. Paul, would you like to add anything to that?
Well, yeah, they're wonderful. Hannah and David of Superfan really do get the word out. They work for their, well, one of their many clients is Ahoy Comics, and yes. So they get the word out about Ahoy to so many places. It's wonderful to see.
Thank you very much. Okay. Now, where can listeners follow you on social media?
I've got paulcornell.com, where you'll find my link tree. I'm on Instagram, Blue Sky, and LinkedIn, and nowhere else.
Okay.
Having been driven away.
Now, let's just jump right in. Con and On. Now, Karen Gillian, this is his quote, "Funny, smart, and sharply observed. Does what every great con does, remind you that while the medium is obsessed with superhuman, it's the human that makes it matter, for better or for worse." Now, how did you get this quote from him?
Well, I paid him £27.50. His rates are really high. I sent out the first issue to before it was out to a bunch of comic friends. I think he got this reaction because it's a comic about comics. It's a comic about a decades in the life of a big comics convention.
Yes.
And it's full of comics anecdotes. And so you send it to fellow professionals. They go, "Oh, yes, I've been in that situation." But I got a lot of great quotes. And Hall used a bunch of them on the front covers, which was lovely. But Kieran is the quote meister. He's very good at forming a quote. And as I say, his rates are very reasonable.
I'm just kind of surprised he didn't ask you, "Hey, you know, next time we see each other at a con, you know, you just buy me two beers." You know.
Well, that, these days that would be about £27.50.
Okay. Now, for new listeners, now, you know, Paul's already give you guys the idea of what the story is about. For listeners, new and longtime listeners on the podcast, as you guys know, I've interviewed Paul last year when the first issue of Con and On came out last year. I'm sorry, there may be one or two questions that may be a little repetitive from that interview, but I just want to let, you know, everyone know what, you know, not only what, well, like Paul's already talked about what the story is about. Basically, it's a, you know, about, it's a, looking at a major convention, but I'm also going to ask him, like, who are the characters in, who are the rich characters actually in this limited series? So, Paul, you already spoke about what the story is about. I'm going to ask you a process question. You know, what were some of your thoughts on doing the major convention and looking at over the span of years?
Well, I've recently started to write a lot about deep time, about how things change across time.
Yes.
And it struck me that this industry of ours actually changes quite fast.
Yes.
And so I'm a huge fan of various of the enormous American comic cons. And not that this one is based on any particular one. Although this is a satirical book, so I think I would be safe if it was, because I'd just be doing a satire, but you never know.
Yes.
Anyway, I wanted to do a history of our industry, basically, across, not from the very start, but from the time when Jack Kirby was still alive to right now. And Kirby actually pops up in this as a we see him distantly surrounded by cosmic crackle.
Yes.
And when you look back into the history of, say, just to take a random example, San Diego Comic-Con, there's an issue of Iron Man in the 70s where he goes to San Diego Comic-Con, and it's a row of people standing to get in, and there's a guy at a wooden table with a cash box and a ledger, and they're handing over their $5 or whatever it was to get in. And so I did the research about how exactly the ease of getting in and the price of getting in has changed.
Yes.
And it's grown enormous only really, really recently.
Yes.
And so That first splash page at the front of each issue tells us what year it is, what's going on in the media, what's happening in geekery, and also how long the line outside the convention center is.
Yes.
And in the very first issue, which is set two or three decades ago, our heroes have to wait about 20 minutes and they can pay at the door. And they don't have to book their tickets in advance.
Yes.
And I just wanted to highlight little ironies all the way through, like everybody talking about Iron Man. They're going to make a movie about Iron Man. What a ridiculous superhero to pick. Well, that's going to, you know, not do any business. And you know, it's all that stuff. It's just looking at our industry through hindsight.
Yes.
And something I do want to say, because I do think it's been a little bit of perception of this book, is that we're not mocking the fans at all. We're mocking us. We're mocking the professionals. And you know, the vicissitudes of life and the awfulnesses that confront every human. There's death in here. There's quite a lot of heartache. And I wanted to tell a story about two people who arrive together as kids and who take vastly different paths afterwards. And I also wanted to talk about sudden fame, fairly immediate fame, because that happens to quite a few of us in this business. And then it sort of goes away like radioactive decay. It slowly dwindles. And if you're really good, if you're one of the Mark Wades of this world, you know, you got no decay. You're just going to keep on as a steady line. But you know, we all know of folk who've gone to the heights and then plunged to the depths.
Yes.
And this is what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to some extent, our rather awful lead protagonist, Eddie, shares certain DNA with me. I mean, I got my Marvel and DC exclusives early and didn't know what to do with it and blew it, basically, and didn't make the most of my opportunities and all my own fault. And so I wanted to show a young man making the wrong choices and falling in the wrong way. And, you know, what the environment around that person was like. Now, it's not all true about me, but about 90% of this book is true about somebody.
Yes.
There's loads of anecdotes that happen to either me or a friend of mine or people talk about in bars. You know, there's a ton of stuff here that's taken from reality. Sorry, I went on and on.
No, it's, I mean, I'm going to say, Paul, thank you very much for opening up and sharing that the character of Eddie is like, it's kind of like, and correct me if it's kind of like loosely based on you and your experience.
It's the worst me. It's the me who made all the wrong choices. I think I've recovered to quite some degree, and the radioactive decay with me is not so much anymore. But because the other thing is, you can go up and down.
Yes,
and we all know creators who've done that too.
Yes,
but I wanted to represent that. I wanted to represent the path of somebody who's not a young white male who and exactly why their path is harder and not just say it is, but show why it was.
Yes.
And you know, I think that's really important to do and show how hard won all of that is. So, you know, those are the two central characters, and around them we've got a bunch of recurring folk who appear in these the gaps are about 8 years between each convention.
Yes.
So we've got Val Molson, who's really the hero.
Yes.
She's a fan who initially is deeply suspicious that there should be cinema or TV doing panels at Comic-Con.
Yes.
Because when we first join this convention, there really isn't.
Yes.
So she goes along to see why on earth anybody would do a panel about a TV show, and sees an actor who turns out to be her hero,
mm-hmm.
who himself falls really badly.
Yes.
And then recovers kind of with her help and the help, yes, of her friends, and goes on an arc again that I think we recognize. So I love Val Molson. And I think she's sort of my every person. She kind of represents,
yes,
the good in us all.
Yes.
And, so my lead fan, as it were, is a shining beacon of hope.
There's a couple other characters I want to ask about. Can you tell? Because we see Anthony, Don, and Finn. And, of course,
oh, yeah,
Annie plays an important role.
Yeah. Anthony, Don, and Finn. I've said this is a satirical book. They are,
yes,
part of the first wave of British comickers to go to the United States, and they are a dapper chap who always wears a suit and tie.
Yes.
A wild man who's incomprehensible.
Yes.
And drunk almost all the time.
Yes.
And a cosmic explorer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that covers just about all British comickers. there's certainly about seven or eight of each of those.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to put all those types together and enjoy their adventures across all this time. And Annie owns the bar where initially,
yes,
they go because fans don't go there and they can go hide.
Yes.
And things develop from there until she becomes a major love interest of one of the characters.
Yes.
And then she goes off on a whole arc of her own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is one of my favorite parts, actually. All three of those characters are innately decent.
Yes.
Because I think one can name names when one is saying about decent people, but certainly I won't. But all the dapper English comickers I know,
mm-hmm,
are tremendously nice and decent people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yes, and the cosmic explorers I've got to know have been thoroughly lovely as well. And also, most of the drunken wild men have turned out to be very nice when you get to know them. there are those three who pop up every year. There are the two old SF writers at the start.
Yes.
Who are there remembering the ancient Comic Cons,
yes,
when it was an offshoot of science fiction fandom.
Mm-hmm.
And you read one of the oral histories of Star Trek books,
mm-hmm,
and it becomes really clear that the whole Comic-Con movement,
mm-hmm,
spins out of science fiction fandom, when science fiction fandom basically kicks out female Star Trek fans.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And there's a wonderful bit saying, well, we decided to organize our own convention at a small library, and we were startled when all the roads around were full of people.
Mm-hmm.
And they swiftly realize that they're going to be bigger than science fiction fandom incredibly quickly, hence Comic-Con. And those elderly SF writers kind of remember. They remember the tininess, yes, and the smallness and the relative control they had. But one of them, who's my kind of Ray Bradbury, has a vision of the future, which I,
yes,
hope is one that pays off by the end of the five issues.
Okay.
Oh, you're going to ask about the two dealers.
Yes.
Yeah, there are two comics dealers who show up for one single panel in every until the final issue. And in that panel, they are always saying, oh, this is my last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's what comics dealers are always saying.
Okay.
And these two are ageless. They do not age like the rest of our cast.
Okay. Oh, but thank you. That was great. Oh, thank you. That was great. Couple other characters I want to go over is the two young girls. One of them is Ashley, and I never got, and you can correct me, but I never got her other friend's name.
I don't know if I put her friend's name in dialogue, because it's always just them talking to each other.
Yes.
They start out as toddlers in the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
And by the final issue, they have families of their own.
Yes.
And they never lose their enthusiasm for the comics convention.
Yes.
And they use it as a background and an illustration to their lives. And I just thought there's going to be people like that. And, a couple of friends of mine who live in San Diego, they take part in the masquerade.
Mm-hmm.
They it's a big part of their summer. It's and it's just lifestyle for them. They will always be there.
Yes.
And I love fans like that. And I just wanted to do not a whole life, but a long stretch of big changes for these two across time.
The other thing I love what you did with this is that these are two young female fans that started off in the 90s. Because now, I've been a longtime comic book fan, and I still remember the 80s and 90s whenever, I see, quote unquote, but okay, listeners, I was young back then, quote unquote, either a girl or a young woman in the comic shop. I'm going, first thought is, what are they doing there? Second, they must be there with their boyfriend, and not thinking, they read comics too.
Oh, yeah, and they've always been there. I mean, that's one thing we should say.
Yes. But,
really, their arc just defines the time when many, many more reading opportunities start to open for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they start as really kids too small to read most of the comics on display.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've had pathways across, evolving comics fandom that that have been different to any they would have had before.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to think of it. Is there anybody else? I know there are. One thing you were kind enough to mention is that we do check in with everybody. We check in with the security staff.
Yes.
We check in with the guys picking up the litter.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to show all the different levels of the convention, and particularly the vast economic inequality that's going on here.
Yes.
The fact that a lot of the workers here could not afford to go.
Yes.
And also from a certain point of view, this is basically one big shop.
Mm-hmm.
You're paying a fortune to go inside an enormous shop where you'll be expected to buy other things.
Yes.
And I know my dad would have reacted very badly to that. And there's part of me that goes, wow, capitalism has really done a prestige on that one, really fluttered its hands in front of our faces. But I don't think kids are very interested in the panels. They want to go on the convention floor.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But it's a big slice across time of how conventions are. And I wanted to do a scene with a major comics company on a yacht.
Oh, yes.
Because I recall the yachts.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to show off cosplay, which is another thing the two young women do across time. They're cosplayers.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a scene in the museum.
Yes.
I love the Comic-Con Museum in San Diego. And you know, it's trying to do a bit of everything. And Mariko Cresta, the artist, was really good at what does the awnings that cover up the queue for hall, the big hall where the movie stars are, what does that look like? And what do people look like when they're camping out there?
Yes.
And, you know, she's very good with, you know, just getting that little bit of feel.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very pleased to have her on board for this. And her initial character designs, me and the editor, Tom Payer, were quite startled.
Mm-hmm.
With just a couple of exceptions, she got the characters immediately. I mean, her first designs were straight out of my head. So and that never happens. So and I like the anguish in her characters. Her characters have a sort of their body language is always quite fraught. They're always emoting. And,
yes.
Yeah.
Especially with Deja's her facial expressions and her body tone. It's like, oh, I just love it when it come across, you know, I just love it. It's whenever something, the party that she's invited to and someone goes, hey, you know, I can get you something, but you got to give me something. And I love her expression of, she gives that angry look of, no, what, you know, what do you, you know?
Yeah. And also that, I think, Marika adds that note of, you know, I actually had hope about this meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that collapsed.
Yes.
Hope.
Yes.
And because I remember those parties too, on top of hotels with mm-hmm. fire and dancing mm-hmm. girls in cages on one major comics company party on one occasion. Even back then, I was thinking, is this really?
yeah, see, because it's.
But
oh. Oh, okay. I'm gonna continue on. There is a couple scenes. There are a couple funny scenes that you included in this series that I that it feels like it's one is from a fan. I could see a fan. I've not done this, or I sort of came close to doing something like this. But you know how fans interrupt comic book creators. Like one of the scenes where Eddie interrupts your character Julius Krunkel's lunch outside of a lunch wagon. Because he's like, I love it because, you know, and he's like, oh my God, you wrote this, you did this, and you did this. And Julius tells him, okay, quote, you can ask questions until I finish eating, you know, I finish my sandwich.
Yeah. That's the microphabe of people in our business, that, mm-hmm. that you will be recognized by very few people, but when you've got enough of them in one place, you aren't going to be able to eat that sandwich. And it's also the fact that Eddie has the ability to recognize the ancient comics editor.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, the pathways that open up when you can exchange certain social cues with the people in
mm-hmm.
charge.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you were going to ask about the, because I'm in this comic.
Because
the scene I'm in is true. It happened.
Yes.
And I just thought, well, it's a fairly harmless scene. Something awful happens to the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for me to assign it to a fictional character. It's just, I can be the one who it happens to. And I'm very much the victim of the story. But, and Marika drew me a lot more handsome than in real life. But And I think she's in here too. I think she's on the Women in Comics panel, which is
I see.
the year when they get very angry about there being a Women in Comics panel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think she's drawn herself into it as well.
Okay, but because I'm not gonna spoil it for listeners because they have to pick up the trade and read you what really happened to you at your meeting. And but it's always like you said, these nice little microorganisms scenes at conventions that happens to some creators. Like you said, you're at these, for example, like you just said, you were at this big party and all of a sudden you're looking at, okay, why are we having go-go dancers in cages? Shouldn't it just be drinks and hors
One of
d'oeuvres?
my, one of my, one of my, one of my favorite bits is representing something that happens a lot, which is the creator that is on their own with no signing queue, and somebody will come up to you and go, "Wow, I thought they'd be round the block for you. Nobody at all, huh? Not a single one. Wow." And also there's that fan accuracy.
Yes.
Being in Doctor Who fandom, every Doctor actor talks about having fans come up and saying, "You are my sixth favorite Doctor." I mean, at least you're in the top 10, I guess. So there's some of that.
Yes. I love this series because it shows the reality of the comic book industry at a different angle from the convention point of view. Like you said, everything from fan interactions to, legendary creators, even behind the scenes of what's going on. It's a great story. Paul, you have pulled it together because you have a rich cast of characters.
Thank you.
And you're able to tell stories in almost like either three or four pages of each issue. And it's put together beautifully in this trade.
Thank you. I should mention one thing I did right at the end, where because me and Tom Payer looked at the first issue and said, "Well, it's cool, it works, but would be good to have an extra dimension, wouldn't it?" So we came up with a commentary track, in that the whole story has in captions a commentary track from the future, from a historian looking, a cultural historian looking back.
That's right.
Who will say things like, "Well, obviously you'll all know who these two are, so I shan't elaborate," and will drop hints and has ironic comment to make, like with the two dealers who it's always their last year. There will just be a little quote, "It was not their last year."
Yes.
And, I think really added something. And I always wrote those absolutely the last thing, once I had all the finished art and all the finished dialogue for everything else, because then it could really lay on top. And that really adds something for me. I think in individual issues, some people bounced off it because of the leaps of years between each issue.
Yes.
But it really, I've read it now as a graphic novel, and it really makes sense in one body. And I'm desperately proud of it.
Yes.
I originally wanted to write a murder mystery set at a big convention.
Yes.
And I thought, let's just take out the murder. And literally the only comics company that would publish a satirical take on comics conventions. Mm-hmm. It's Ahoy. I mean,
yes.
They are the ones for dark humor. They are the ones for satire. And long may the good ship Ahoy remain afloat.
Yes. I agree with you. Let's see. I'm going to, because for this trade, you have Norman Fields the third who wrote the introduction.
This is not a real person.
Oh,
this
love
is
it.
this is Tom Payer joining in my my ability to create fictional characters who are remind us of real people.
Oh, so Paul, did we just spoil this for the
Well, I
readers?
don't know.
I love
I,
it.
Tom's gonna hate me that I've blown his gaff, I think. But it's actually a character who pops up in a few other little places across all Ahoy comics. And but no, I think he just wanted to join in. I mean, you'll notice that he's kind of angry. I mean.
Love it though. Thank you. That was great. All right. We've already gave out to sh the shout out to Tom for writing the introduction. Do you want to give out any other shout outs to the other members of the creative team?
I mean, Deron Bennett is kind of one of these geniuses of comics who's going to end up with an Inkpot Award one day, because he does everything. And he's down there in the infrastructure of comics, working to make the whole business better. And our colorist really knew how to draw Californian skies and lighting. And please remind me of our colorist's name. I'm so
Paul,
sorry.
no, Paul Little.
Of course, Paul Little. He's very, very good at the making it feel like you're there in that weather. And so, yeah, great stuff.
And then I just want to give out, of course, the letter up. I believe he does probably most of Ahoy Comics, if not all, Rob Steen.
Yeah. Ahoy Comics really need quality lettering because, the comedy is often enhanced by the way the dialogue is presented. And so yeah, he's their go-to.
Right. And then also too, I want to give a shout out to and I'm gonna hopefully I pronounce the cover artist name, Dan Shrunik.
Yeah, they are very different, aren't they? And they're very dark.
Yes.
The mainstream covers are quite bouncy,
Yes.
and the alternate covers are dark as ditch water, and they sort of really just give you snapshots, moments of largely of awfulness, actually, when you look at them. And I really like the one of Eddie kind of vomiting what looks like something radioactive almost,
yes.
because that's kind of he's failing to digest comics. He's failing to digest Kirby. They're genius. It took me a moment. I had to live with the first painting for a while until I went, yeah, I absolutely see it. And I think it really adds something
It does.
from left field.
Yes. Listeners, when you guys pick up this trade, you'll also see a couple of unused covers that Dan did. One is pretty funny. I have to say, it's pretty funny because I mean, and the other one, it's basically to me, I think Dan captures the realities of the conventions at times. Like I said, there's one funny cover. I don't want to spoil it. And then there's another cover that's like, oh yeah, I can see that. But it's the
Yeah.
reality of it as well.
Yeah.
Now, Paul, you read my questions already. And I'm going to be honest, I don't want us to focus on the downside or negative side of cons because we all have our stories, we do, and I don't want to focus on that. But out of all the cons that you have attended as a fan or as a creator, what was the most coolest thing or something that you saw that really moved you at one of the cons?
Well, I mean, basically, let's put aside Gallifrey won the big Doctor Who convention, because that's basically a yearly epiphany for me and my people. So that I moved on a continual basis by that one. But comics wise, I think just those lovely times when you were in one of the acknowledged social centres, mm-hmm. and you'll run across one peer and then another, and it'll just sort of turn into a continual bunch of folk you know in this distant climb, all sort of interacting wildly and all off to do something. And I remember there are a couple of folk who I regularly see right at the end of San Diego Comic-Con. And, you know, by the end of it, I am just a monster. There was one time when DC took all our official publicity photos on day 5.
Oh, God.
And we were like desiccated husks. I was like Gollum from the Lord of the Rings movies. I had one eye bigger than the other, you know. And I don't think they ended up using any of those photos because it would scare the horses too much. But the way that one will throw oneself into this, and just the times when I've been sitting in a bar right at the end with some lovely folk, mm-hmm. and closing the place down. I once closed a bar down with Chris Claremont, just me and Chris Claremont. And wow, mm-hmm. I mean, his quality, he's still undervalued, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's somewhere in the top 3 or 4 mm-hmm. great comic creators.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it was just a privilege. I mean, it's such a Chris Claremont thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's anyway, that, so maybe that.
Okay. Slowly wrapping things up, what was the most fun or exciting thing that you love working on this series?
Oh, I think it was watching my peers read it and go, yeah, we recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was very gratifying.
So cool. All right. We're going to talk about your next project. And correct me if I'm wrong, it's called Who Killed Nessie? Is that correct?
Yes. The title?
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry to reveal this to you, but Nessie is dead.
Okay.
The Loch Ness monster. This is a crowdfunding campaign from Zoop,
mm-hmm.
you know, Zoop, those wonderful people.
Yes.
Me and the great cartoonist Rachel Smith, mm-hmm. who does Nap Comics and has done a whole bunch of books like Wired Up Wrong, autobiographical comics. We are doing this comedy mystery cryptozoological murder mystery. Basically, the idea for the cover of the title just appeared in my head one day,
mm-hmm.
of a bunch of cryptids standing around while there's one of those chalk lines that identifies a body, and the chalk line is in the shape of the Loch Ness monster. And it's about a cryptid convention at a hotel in the Great Lakes, where a single woman is left, the newbie, the intern, is left to take care of the hotel on the weekend of the convention because nobody else wants to. And she ends up being asked to solve the murder of the Loch Ness monster. And there are, you know, fairies and yetis and skunk apes and lake monsters in the lake outside. And you know, me and Rachel have had tremendous fun doing her art for this. Her art is so cute and so well observed and so humane. And I love her fairies. If you pop along to, if you search for Nessie and Zoop, Zoop, you'll find the page which describes it, and it'll be, and you can sign up to register your email, so you'll get a notice when the campaign goes live.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, we'll be, the campaign will be going live, in a week or two, less than a week, I think. And then, you know, my life will become an endless round of talking about Nessie, basically. No, her art is amazing, and it's nice to write a comedy. It's nice to write a mystery.
Yes.
And it's nice to write about cryptids.
Yes. All right. Two more questions. Your next convention or store signing appearance, probably within the next, or either the rest of the remainder of the year or the next few months, or?
London Comics Festival, San Diego, obviously, and of course Thought Bubble, which is a wonderful, wonderful show and somewhere the only place I really take a table. So I'll be selling copies of Saucer Country there, rather wonderfully. So yes, those.
Any closing words to our listeners?
Oh, hey, thank you so much for having me along, and thank you for the enthusiasm for Con and On. I've become a bit of a graphic novelist these days. I've sort of got a bunch of creator-owned graphic novels to my name, and Con and On is something I'm very proud of.
Paul, mahalo. Thank you in Hawaiian. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for giving me another opportunity to interview. Thank you very much. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk to you about Con and On, because I know the first time we talked about it was just only the first issue, but now we're, you know, I can, stuff that we can talk, you know, you can mention, it's like, yes, because I've read the whole series and I love it. It's great.
Bless you. Thank you.
Yes. And I wish you all the success with the Con and On trade, and also for your Zoop crowdfunding, Who Killed Nessie? Yes. Yes. So thank you. I also want to thank Hannah of Superfan Promotion. Hannah, thank you very much for setting up this interview and for the advanced reading copy. Now, if you are a new comic book reader or a lifelong comic book reader that loves to attend comic book conventions, please check out Con and On. The trade comes out on March 27th. I love this story because it's about us, the fans, you know. And also, and I, like I mentioned, also gives a different view, a little bit of a different viewpoint of the comic books industry, of what goes behind the scenes, at any major cons. You know, to me, this story works on many levels. One, it starts off as a cautionary tale of aspiring comic book creators, but also too, it's about a strong bond of family and friendship that have endured over years. It's about a love story in the midst of all this chaos, and it's about rebirth as well too. And finally, it's about the human experience of connecting with each other about a hobby that we all love. Paul, I'm being serious. You know, listeners, if you guys get a chance, please pick up a copy of Con and On, and you know, give it to your comic book friends as either as a birthday gift or as a gift to share with someone. And also to listeners, please, the notification for the Zoop crowdfunding starts up for Who Killed Nessie, please consider backing up that campaign. I want to thank Drew, the host of Comics for Fun and Profit, for putting this episode together. Drew, thank you very much for all your hard work behind the scenes. And if you are a new listener, please check out new episodes of Comics for Fun and Profit that comes out every Saturday. And I want to thank you, the listener. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for listening to this episode. Until next time, guys. Aloha.
Check out beacons.ai/comicsfunprofit for all the C4 FAP links you could ever need, all in one place. You can provide feedback, listen, support, share, enjoy these. We have our Patreon there. You can buy us a beer or a coffee. You can check out our Instagrams, our Twitters, our Facebooks. Check out our YouTube page. You can email us. You can listen to our podcasts on Patreon, if you're a subscriber, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, on Podbean. We have Google Podcasts on there. We have an Amazon wish list. You want to buy Kyle and I something? Fine. You can do that here. We appreciate it. We have Kyle's RPG podcast listed on there, so you can check out his Dork Day Afternoon offerings. We have Cowabunga links, so you can check out the Cowabunga deep discount FOC and pre-order list. Get on that. That's RLCS, so you can check that out as well. And we want to just give you opportunities to say hi, to check out what we're doing, support us if you would like, or just listen. Check out beacons.ai/comicsfunprofit for all the C4 FAP links you could ever need. Thanks. Back to the show.